This Beyond the Curriculum podcast series explores the book Ungrading, Why Rating Students Undermines Learning and What to Do Instead. Through the end of December, you can pick up a copy on the West Virginia University Press website for 30% off the paperback price using the code PODTALIHE. Again, that's PODTALIHE. Details are found in the show notes on beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com. What does it mean to be truly educated?
To be truly educated is to have the critical thinking tools, the creative tools that enable you to create, that enable you to discover, to invent, to find your way, to self-reflect, and to evolve. To be truly educated means that you have acquired the tools to be able to educate yourself.
To me, being truly educated means being able to know enough to be both curious and critical, to be both skeptical and creative.
That's Dr. Christina Katapotis and Dr. Kathy Davidson. Dr. Katapotis is the Executive Director of Transformative Learning in the Humanities at City University in New York and recently received her doctorate in English at the Graduate Center of CUNY and an adjunct instructor at New Jersey City University. She is a scholar of environmental studies, sound studies, and American literature. Kathy Davidson is founder of the Futures Initiative and distinguished professor of English and Masters of Arts in Digital Humanities and Masters of Science in Data Analysis and Visualization, a DeVarney Professor Emerita of Interdisciplinary Studies, Duke University, co-founder and co-director of Haystack.org, and co-director of Transformative Learning in the Humanities. In this episode, Christina and Kathy will discuss contract grading and how peer editing both honors and challenges students in their learning. This is the third episode of a six-part series on the book Ungrading, where you will hear from the chapter authors themselves, who will help us dive deeper into their ideas about assessment and its impact on teaching and learning, allowing us to go beyond the curriculum. So tell me how you got connected with this project.
I think, and Christina, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think this happened through the wonders and magic of academic Twitter. That many of us have been working on variations of ungrading for a very long time, other people more recently. But on academic Twitter, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we started talking about all kinds of ideas in progressive education, ungrading being one of several. And Susan Blum said, you know, there's enough of us now. We should think about making a book so we could bring together all the different kinds of alternative evaluation and formative feedback that's out there. And I think it started that way. Christina, do you remember?
Yeah, I think Susan brought that up and reached out to you at some point, and you were sharing with her the book that we were writing, and it was kind of perfect because we ended up co-writing on assessment.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we have a chapter in the, Christina and I are writing a book called, well, we don't know what it will be called, but right now it's called Transforming Every Classroom, a Practical Step-by-Step Guide to Revolutionary Teaching and Learning. And Harvard is publishing it in 2022. And we have a whole chapter on ungrading, a formative assessment, different kinds of assessment, et cetera. So working with Susan was just perfect, perfect timing.
Now, is that book going to be primarily for higher ed, or is that going to be across the board?
It's primarily higher ed, but a lot of the things we've learned is from K through 12 and professional credentialing and professional training, and vice versa. I think there'll be lots that people can learn. It's also international. We're trying to figure out how people are doing things in different countries. Not every country sends everybody from high school to college. There are many alternative systems, vocational systems, and other things along the way. So we're trying to be as expansive as we can and as compendious as we can.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that. So your chapter develops contract grading and peer evaluation. Help me to understand contract grading and what are its benefits? And then how does that fit into peer evaluation?
So I think my part was mostly the contract grading part, and Christina's was primarily the peer evaluation. So if that works, we can divide it up that way, since that's where we have most expertise. And in the book, we actually have contracts and peer forms, so people can see the nitty-gritty, because it's often on the nitty-gritty that people fall down. The basics of contract grading isn't much different than when you contract with somebody to lay a carpet in your living room and you specify what they're going to do. And if they do what they say they're going to do properly, they get their full money for it. If they've tracked tar into your living room, haven't laid down the foundation for the carpeting, don't do the things they promised to do, have tax sticking up all over the place, you don't pay them. I mean, it may go to court, but you don't pay them. But it literally is a contract. And in higher education, the way contract grading works is you take all of the different components on your syllabus of what constitutes the material that will be evaluated in a course. And a student says, I'm going to accomplish this satisfactory, these eight things. And if I do these eight things, I, as a teacher, then say you earn an A for the class. Somebody else might say, I don't need an A. I only need a B. But I'm really stressed and pressed this semester. I only want to do these six things. So if they do those six things, they get a B for the course. So the student goes in knowing what the quantity is and what the expectations are. So you have to spell out the expectations as well. And then there's many different ways that you can evaluate if somebody fulfilled their contract. But basically you're saying if you have high quality for the amount of work you've contracted, you can plan your life around that. I'm not going to be tricky about it. You do it, you get paid in the same way I would pay somebody who I value enough to come into my house and do some kind of work in my house. Only this is on an educational level. It's very clear cut, in other words, unlike most grading, which had so much gray area and students go into it with so much anxiety, not knowing what they really need to do to contribute and to earn a grade.
Well, I'm sure this is going to tie into Christina. So I'm going to assume that there's a level of quality that needs to be met. How do you ensure that level of quality?
So my part of the chapter is really about peer evaluation. And, this quality is always a very big concern when doing group work throughout the semester, or the trimester, or term. And, it makes everyone, I think, very nervous to engage in a group of people, work with people that you don't quite know yet. And if that is going to be graded at the end, then everyone is quite nervous about, is everyone going to contribute equally? Is the quality going to affect my grade, bring it up, bring it down? It really sparks a lot of anxiety, I think, among students. And there's a really tough balance between, evaluating your own work, evaluating peers' work, and also not having the final say, because really you don't want to overburden students with determining someone else's grade, right? Ultimately, that's the teacher's responsibility. And so it all requires kind of a tough balance between these things. So one thing that I did in this one course, and this is the example in the book chapter, is I published the evaluative criteria for peer evaluation in the syllabus, and we went over it on the first day. So students knew from the outset that things like being a good listener, being a good volunteer, are the kind of skills that would be evaluated at the end of the semester. So at the end of the semester, they get the exact same form that's published in the syllabus from day one. With criteria like, have you been working on being a good listener? have you been working on being a good volunteer? And if you notice in the language, it's not, were you a good listener? Were you a good volunteer? It's not that definite. It's much more in Carol Dweck's philosophy of a growth mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Are you working? Have you been working on being a good listener? Have you been working on being a good volunteer? And, you know, and if not, like, what advice would you give to your peer, you know, in future, in another class or in a job after college? That way it's not necessarily like judging, like, you are good at this, end story. You are bad at this, end story. That's not really about development. And that's where that peer evaluation form comes in.
I really like that idea of the process. I was having a conversation with somebody recently about the idea of effort in school. And in a lot of standards-based grading worlds, effort should be a kind of excluded, but you know, as a golf coach, I know that effort is what, you know, gets that person to excellence. And so effort needs to be acknowledged. And I love the idea of turning that into process, that I am becoming a good listener, or I'm becoming a good whatever. I really do appreciate that.
I recently saw on, maybe it was on Twitter, it was on somewhere on social media, somebody talking about how Miles Davis would practice 8 hours a day, every day. And somebody mm-hmm. said, well, when he's on stage, he's practicing. He says, no, when he's on stage, he's performing. Practice is a whole different thing. Practice, you do something, you listen, you correct, you do it again, you correct. You're not worried about how the audience hears it, because the audience's ears are never as good as yours. And I'm sure as a golf coach, you have something similar, where your students on the golf course are winning and doing what they need to in the golf course. But when they're practicing, they're looking at their swing. They're evaluating. Other people are mm-hmm. helping them evaluate. They're correcting. They're self-correcting. They're helping each other correct. It's an incredibly complex process that, unfortunately, school is one of the few places where we take that that very, very complex process of learning and devolve it, reduce it to just the grade or even the performance of a grade, rather than that very important life skill of knowing how to practice and constantly improve yourself.
Yeah. And I think on the one hand, right, it when you set up, like, from the beginning, the contract grading that Kathy is talking about, or the peer evaluation process, I think students recognize that, you know, this isn't a punitive system. This isn't like a slow docking of their work. This is an opportunity for them to grow, to practice, to get better with their craft. And I think one of the beautiful outcomes of this is that they're more focused on their own development and improvement, rather than what do I have to do to get that A? What do I have to do to bring this up, you know, half a point? And rather than, you know, spending time at the end of the semester grade grubbing, or like trying to get extra credit, or you know, focusing on these little points, they're actually, and I've noticed this, there's a demonstrable difference, actually, in my students' performance when I used this peer evaluation system and ungrading methods. Instead of giving grades on essays throughout the semester, I gave feedback on what the strengths and weaknesses of those essays were. And I noticed in that semester that I taught this course, my students performed better on their final papers by at least a whole letter grade than an almost identical class I taught the year before without using ungrading methods. And that, you know, that really showed me that students had earnestly been working on their craft and developing as writers, and they did better.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes back to Ruth Butler's study, that the yes. idea of grades and feedback, how that differentiates, and how, yeah, kids are going to do better when they're getting feedback only.
Yeah.
So leading into that, how do you facilitate the peer evaluation?
So the way I facilitate these is I begin with self-evaluation. So I hand out a form, and this is actually in the chapter at the end. that guide students through evaluating their own work, listening, and volunteering throughout the class and during group work. And then after they've filled these out with short answers, then they fill out the peer evaluations, which are a little bit shorter. And what I found was that students got used to a more discursive method of using short answers to address the questions on the forms. And so they actually gave really beautiful feedback in like short paragraphs to each of their peers reflecting on the semester together. And so I think the process worked to start thinking in like discursive terms about their own performance, and then that leading to giving substantive comments and really kind and generous and beautiful comments on their peers' work.
I recently, we interviewed somebody who does something called end wrapping in final exams. And it's a technique she borrowed from, it's done in nursing schools, physics, chemistry, biology, a lot of pre-med classes, and she's in a law school. And what it is she gives a standard final exam, but in the final exam, she has two questions that are mandatory to be answered, but they're not graded. And one is, what grade do you think you're going to get on this exam? And the other one is, how many hours did you study for this exam? And then when students get back their grade, she walks them through this before they even, they look at their comments on their exam before they get their even their actual grade back. And then when they get their grade back, she does a different version of this. But they look at the difference and see if there's a discrepancy between what grade they thought they were going to get and what grade they did get, and how much studying they did and the grade they did. And if there's no discrepancy, no problem. But if there is a discrepancy, it's such a great way of self-reflection and self-knowing and such a powerful life tool. And as she says, as a law student, taking the bar exam is the beginning, not the end. You are learning your whole life. You're never not doing research as a lawyer. So it's the single most important thing she can give her law graduates is teaching them that they can sometimes overestimate their knowledge. And we all do that. There have been so many cognitive neuroscience tests about how we all think we're smarter than we are. And we all think we know more than we do. So this is a really simple built-in factor that allows you to really assess that and have in the back of your mind anytime you say, oh, I know that, to say, do I really know that? Or have I proven to myself? And that's the main point, that no one's proving it to you. You prove to yourself that, in fact, I have to check that when I think I know too much, or when I know everything I need to know. And that to me is so simple and such a great thing that anybody at any level from first grade to, somebody doing a Supreme Court case as a lawyer can have in their arsenal of growth mindset and ways to think about knowing.
Right. You're absolutely right. And that is, self-evaluating, self-reflection is the skill that you're teaching. And that is what's going to help them to be successful beyond the classroom.
Absolutely. Long after content is forgotten, those are invaluable life lessons.
So can you give me an example of, Kathy, of how contract grading works? Could you describe what that might look like?
Sure. So let's say last semester I taught a class called with Professor Eduardo Viana at LaGuardia Community College. He's an MD who also has a PhD in Vygotskian psychology. So we were using a lot of Vygotskian methods, meaning methods where you help students 85% of the time and then purposely don't help for approximately 15% of the time, because you know that last 15% where they go from what you've scaffolded as knowledge to some big leap someplace else, that's where development really happens. And what we did in our contracts is we, again, spelled out the four things we wanted the students to be able to accomplish by the end of the term, and said, this is what you need for an A if you do all four of these. One was an online presentation. One was a group development of a topic. One was a final summation for a public audience. We did it on the Haystack Blogs. Haystack is an organization I co-founded in 2002, the world's first and oldest academic social network, and it's an acronym, H-A-S-T-A-C, Humanities, Arts, Science, Technology Alliance and Collaboratory, has over almost 18,000 members. So these are new graduate students writing for a very big public academic audience. So that's what you needed to do to get an A. I had three students in the class who said, we're too stressed out. One of them ran technology at ran the IT department at another liberal arts college. And suddenly with COVID, all the students had to go online. She was way too busy to do the fourth assignment. She didn't. She earned a B in the class because that's what she contracted to do. She did all the three assignments very, very well, but she just didn't have time to do that fourth public contribution to knowledge. And she knew that in advance. And again, that's the most important thing. You can plan. A contract assumes that students aren't just taking your class as if that's the only thing they're doing in the universe, and allows students to plan around it. Many years ago in a contract grading class, I had a student who was starring in the senior class play and was a quarterback of the football team. And he said, I'm an A student. I can get a C in this class and it doesn't matter. I'm already accepted to what I want to do. I already have my job next semester and I've got these two really important things to me. So I'm not going to do these three assignments because all I need is a C in the course. He did so brilliantly. I wanted to give him a higher grade and he was furious. He said, that is an insult to my integrity and to the integrity of this process. I have earned my C. So I gave him a C in that class. But needless to say, I will write recommendations for him till the day he dies. I mean, you know, I was so impressed by his integrity that he was adamant that he had done three assignments and he'd earned his C and he was proud of that. Yeah. That's a real maturity. That, again, is a life lesson.
I absolutely love that, one of the things that school assumes is that, especially high school, is that kids are going to be experts in six different content areas. And yes. We can't assume that. I mean, I'm an expert in teaching English and maybe coaching golf, but that's about it. You know, and I feel like I got a lot on my plate with that. So it sounds like this would transition easily into other content areas. Have you seen this applied in other content areas?
Oh, I first learned, started studying both peer badging, peer evaluation and badging and contract grading from working very early on in the early 2000s with the first developers of Wikipedia, the first developers. I worked on a project with one of the people who helped design the recommendation system for Amazon. I think he was number 14 at Amazon. So I learned from mostly computer programmers and people working in this new field that didn't have a name yet, because social media didn't exist. Haystack was invented 2 years before MySpace, before Wikipedia existed. You know, so we were all inventing this together. And the idea of contract grading and peer evaluation came out of that, at least in my knowledge, came out of that community.
Mm, okay.
Also, I mean, peer evaluations, the way that I ran them, right, it was a self-evaluation. There were peer-to-peer evaluations for groups of 5 to 6 students. And then there was my evaluation that synthesized the self and peer evaluations on top of that. And so this is a method in the corporate world called 360 feedback, 360 degrees of feedback. And it's something my partner actually works for a large corporation here based in New York City. And they do 360s, I think, twice a year. So it's something that is not only applicable in other content areas, say business and finance, but also well beyond the academy.
Mm. So what are some resources that you would point listeners to who are interested in both contract grading and peer evaluation?
Well, needless to say, buy this book.
Yes.
I mean, what among the things I love about this book is it's tiny. I mean, it fits beautifully in the hand and you can look at this and say, I'm going to learn not just what to do in the theory, but actually how to do it with really clear, practical examples. And this is doable. It's a manageable book. It's not a huge tome. Susan Blum, the editor, pushed us all to write it with great clarity. There's a marvelous foreword by the great Alfie Cohn, who just in the clearest language says we have 30 years, 40 years of really solid research that shows if you grade, students are less interested in learning. They're more interested in making the task as easy as possible so they get the higher grade, and they think in a shallower way. Is that really what education wants? And he really lays that out in the most clear terms that sets up the whole book. I think it's a wonderful place for anybody to start, and it's got a good, healthy bibliography and quite a lot of footnotes and appendices with sample contracts, sample grades, all kinds of really meaty things to learn from.
And you know, coming back to the beginning of this conversation, I love that the book draws from the experience of K through 12. I've learned so much from K through 12 teachers in this book and from all different fields. One of my favorite chapters is from a math teacher. And I think, you know, we all have something to learn from each other. And, you know, if we as educators in higher ed don't pay attention to what's happening in the pedagogy of K through 12, then we wouldn't have a sense of where our students are coming from. And we wouldn't be able to build on those skills as successfully. So I think, you know, Susan did just a tremendous job. And, you know, she also digs deep into Chinese history, British history of education and grading and ungrading methods. And yeah, same as Kathy, buy the book.
Contracts help to teach our students responsibility and accountability, and they honor our students' interest in the course and the time they are able to invest in the class. Contract grading may not be applicable in all settings, but it is helpful when artifacts are needed to demonstrate learning. For more information about Christina and Kathy and the book Ungrading, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. In the next episode, we will hear from Dr. Christopher Reisbeck as he discusses his chapter, Critique-Driven Learning and Assessment. If you enjoy this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button as you'll want to catch each and every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and it helps others find the show. Beyond the Curriculum is part of the Teachers Going Gradeless network. Please consider partnering with us through the Teachers Going Gradeless Patreon page. Your donation will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners beyond the curriculum.